Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani, all rights reserved. Chapter 10. After Callie left the granary at noon the next day, she stopped at the Addison Health Clinic to report that Billy had opted to forgo aggressive treatment in favor of palliative care at home. The receptionist nodded and told her that the staff there had suspected as much. "We got a call from the oncologist first thing this morning informing us that he had denied the case and could not be held responsible for anything that happened to Billy," she reported with a faint smile. "The guy sounded like he has about as much sensitivity as a toilet seat." "As I remember it, we dumped him, not the other way around," Callie set the record straight with a smile. "But I consider his determination to separate himself from us a real plus." She then turned her attention to a more serious subject, home care for the terminally ill. "You know how it is, Callie. Most of the people in this area have always had their own diet at home, so when the time comes, I'm sure everyone in town will pitch in, especially for Billy. I'll put a packet of information about hospice care together for you to review, and then we can get everything set up." Callie nodded, unable to thank the woman because of the sudden tightness in her throat and the tears burning her eyes. After she left the clinic, Callie picked up Billy and Nana and took them to her place, where she fed Billy a bland but nutritious lunch and hovered over him until he ate all of it. Billy had insisted he could still ride his bike out to her place, but she told him she wanted both him and Nana to conserve their strength for more important activities. Even though he refused to admit that his own strength had waned, he couldn't deny that the aging Nana had trouble keeping up with him. Fortunately, by then all the heavy work on the house was done, and Callie and Billy spent their sunny afternoons planting perennials and bulbs, and their rainy ones stenciling, because Billy so loved both of these tasks. When they worked indoors, she let the cats out of the cat room, because everything seemed so much more alive with them around. "Name him," Billy signed, picking up another of Justine's unnamed kittens, this one a lanky male with almond-shaped eyes. Callie raised an eyebrow. "Why?" "To put some order into your life," he smiled. Callie thought about all the other unresolved issues in her life, decided she might as well add one more, and christened the kitten Zed after her ex-spouse, Zedong Johansson. Callie then did or didn't succeed in explaining to Billy that Zed's mother was Chinese and his father was Swedish. The net result of this was a gorgeous creature with whom she later realized she was probably more in lust than in love for 3 years. They met while she was working in Boston as a commercial photographer, where she had already made a small name for herself. Zed worked for an ad agency that had just lost a major account, and he hoped to redeem the firm with his ads for a new pet product put out by a Midwestern meatpacking plant. The two of them spent hours poring over layouts and working to get the lighting on the cans of the new product just so. She did not tell Billy that, after a whole day of close work-related contact followed by a few glasses of after-work wine, it seemed only natural to hop in the sack with Zed. Nor did she tell him that she and her body were delighted to discover that Zed's eclectic heritage and his equally eclectic collection of erotic literature made for some fantastic sex. However, she did sign to Billy that once you see another person in that special way every night for a few weeks, it seemed only natural for them to live together. "And once you live together for a while," she concluded, "why not get married?" "Were you happy?" Billy asked after he processed as much of that as he could. "Yes, for a while. Then things changed." "What things?" Callie walked around the living room, scooping up unnamed kittens and checking under their tails until she handed 3 females to Billy. Betty, Gloria, and Germaine. She enunciated each kitten's new name clearly, even though she knew he couldn't hear her. "Who are they?" Billy wanted to know anyhow. Callie quickly discovered that explaining feminism to Billy was a lot harder than explaining pancreatic cancer. It didn't matter, though, because feminism didn't work for her and Zed either. They started out doing the equality routine, but when Zed's campaign floundered and her successes began to outnumber his, they both felt uncomfortable. "Maybe others can pull that kind of a relationship off, but the more I succeeded, the more Zed and I argued, the more reasons he found to stay out after work, and the harder I worked to avoid facing that it was over. The harder I worked, the more I succeeded, the more he stayed out, and the more his own work deteriorated, which only made things worse between us. Callie spoke to Billy as if he were the best girlfriend she never had, so caught up in articulating thoughts she had shared with no one that she spoke aloud rather than signed. Eventually he got into cocaine, then embezzled a hefty chunk of cash from his company to pay for his habit and took off with a topless dancer. The police hassled me about his whereabouts for months, but eventually gave up. I haven't heard from him in years, and I have no desire to. Billy looked at her inquisitively, following her long oral soliloquy that he could observe but not hear. Whether he grasped the meaning from her body language or not, he zeroed in on the critical point. "Do you miss him?" She shook her head. "No." "Why not? Didn't you like him?" "At one time I liked him very much, but now..." When Billy kept looking at her in that same inquisitive way, she tried to think of a way to describe how she could have been married to someone for whom she now felt nothing at all. All she could do was point to her heart and sign, "Empty. All gone. Nothing here." Billy nodded slowly. "I understand." She believed he did. While Billy slept in the next morning, Penn and Callie restocked the shelves and displays of pet food. As Penn maneuvered stacks of 45-pound bags of dry dog food with a forklift, she arranged canned goods and gourmet treats on the shelves. "Can't help wondering what my grandfather would say if he saw all this," Penn commented dryly during a break. "Back then, he saw this place as putting bread on folks' tables." "Pets serve a vital function too, Penn." "I know that, Callie. Look at Billy and Nana." "Still..." Just then a well-dressed woman entered, carrying an obese Bichon Frise with a tiny blue bow on each ear. Callie and Penn exchanged a look that said it all. "Tourist." When the woman began asking the dog what kind of whittle tweets he wanted, Penn quickly retreated to the back of the store. Callie continued stacking cans, but soon became engrossed in the drama taking place down the aisle from her. The dog obviously didn't care what kind of treat his owner brought him, but she was determined that he would pick one anyhow. "Bijou, tell mummy what you want," she cooed to the dog, who stared at her dully. When her repeated attempts to get the animal to respond failed, she switched tactics. "Would you like some of these?" she asked, shaking a box of organic soy-free tidbits in his face. "Nothing." "How about these yummy fweezed-wide beef wibbertweets?" She rattled a $20 bucketful of morsels at him. "Nothing." Joe McDermott came in, saw the woman and her dog, turned, and went out again. Apparently feeling that her credibility was on the line, the woman then began shaking the dog's right paw. "Oh, you want to point to it yourself?" she twittered, while the bows on the dog's ears bobbed wildly. She jostled the animal up and down the aisle twice before she finally stopped in front of the aforementioned liver snacks. "Oh, you naughty boy, teasing mummy like that," she gushed. Callie suppressed a smile and glanced toward Penn, who had hidden himself behind a stack of dog food. As clearly as Billy himself, he signed, "My grandfather is rolling over in his grave." She stifled her laughter with a cough and went to the counter to ring up the sale. "Bijou and I always stop here on our way from New York to Kennebunkport," the woman confided as she paid for her purchases. "It's so quaint." "God almighty!" The words exploded from behind the pile of dog food with such force that both the woman and her dog jumped. "What was that?" she exclaimed, clutching her pet protectively. "Just one of our employees," Callie assured her soothingly. "He must have dropped something on his foot." No sooner did the woman and her dog disappear out the door than Joe McDermott entered again. "So," he said, leaning on the counter, "what are we going to do if something happens to Nana?" "Get Billy another dog," Callie replied, unable to imagine any other answer. "Where?" "Wherever Nana's come from." "Which is?" "I haven't a clue, but wherever it is, I'll find it." He looked at her for a moment, leaned over the counter, grabbed her, kissed her, then turned and left whistling. Penn ran smack into a pile of dog food with his forklift, goring two bags and sending 80 pounds of kibble rolling across the floor. Callie could just imagine what his grandfather would have said about that. You've been listening to an excerpt from Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani. For more information about this and other books by the author, please visit mmilani.com. The song Irritations into Pearls was composed and performed by Jeff Firestone. For more information about Jeff and his music, please contact him at retromusic@verizon.net. Thanks for listening.